Well, we're continuing our study through Acts, and here we are in Acts chapter 25, and I'd like to begin this evening with a picture, just one simple picture. If I were to ask, how would you describe what that woman is experiencing in one word of one syllable? And I know there's more than one word of one syllable that may describe that, but go ahead, what do you think? One word, one syllable, she's experiencing pain, and many of you nailed it, pain. What is pain? You say it's when I hurt, okay? I think that works. Just to get a little more technical than that, I thought I'd look it up, so I just grabbed a definition off the internet, this one from the clevelandclinic.org, and I'm sure there's others that are similar. It says, pain is an uncomfortable feeling and or an unpleasant sensation in the body. Here's what I want to focus on. The presence of pain often is an indication that something is wrong. And I would assume that's a good definition. That when we're experiencing pain in our bodies, it typically is a sign something's wrong. And I think that's exactly how we view trials. Whenever I encounter some kind of trial in my life, it may be persecution, that's what the trial Paul's facing, but I think it's true of any trial. We tend to think something's wrong, that this isn't right. Why would there be a trial? Like a throbbing in my gum tips me off, something's wrong, you have a toothache. When I encounter a trial, oftentimes I think something's spiritually wrong in my life. And my hope is tonight we can be reminded yet again that that is not the case. But God frequently will bring trials in our life as part of His plan. And He's doing something. He's doing something good. He's doing something wonderful. And we don't, as we've just sung, always understand His wise and perfect plan. This, I am convinced, has to be a key in persevering in trials, or if we prefer, persevering in persecution. This is what the Apostle Paul knew. Here we are in Acts chapter 25, and let me go ahead and just review a little bit what we talked about last two times. Last Lord's Day, we had the morning message focusing on Paul before Felix, and then in the evening, we took a look at Felix himself. But the Apostle Paul's appeared before Felix. He's been falsely accused of things that he's never done, of desecrating the temple, of bringing a Gentile into the temple, of stirring up a riot in Jerusalem, and none of it's true. And so Paul's down in Jerusalem, and the Jews are trying to kill him, and once there's this big riot taking place in the temple complex, the Roman soldiers take Paul prisoner for his own safety. And then after they hold him there in the barracks, they realize this isn't going to work. They sneak him out of town at night. They get him up to Caesarea, and they take him to the governor's mansion there, and he appears before Felix. Felix knows he did nothing wrong. But Felix keeps him, thinking maybe he can make some money, maybe get a bribe. And when he finds out Paul's not that kind of a guy, he decides to keep him simply as a way of helping the Jews. I want to look at this account now, beginning in Acts chapter 25. Remember, Felix is recalled. Felix was not a good governor. And so he was recalled. He had to go to Rome to report. And what happens from then on, we're simply not sure. But here comes Festus, the man we know virtually nothing of, except what we read in this account. In chapter 25 of Acts, I'll begin reading in verse 1. Festus then, having arrived in the province, 3 days later went up to Jerusalem from Caesarea. The first point we're going to consider tonight, three simple points, persevering in persecution is this: expect continued persecution. Satan does not quit. Now, I've just read verse 1. Festus seems like he's a fairly wise person. At least he's politically savvy. You say, where do you see that? Right in verse 1. He arrives in Judea, that's the province. He's only there 3 days, and he goes to Jerusalem because he knows that's where all the trouble's at. And so 3 days on the job, let's go down to Jerusalem, and let's try to just appear before the people. listen to any concerns they have, and maybe try to help things be more peaceful than they were under Felix. So that's what Festus does. Go down to verse 2 now. And the chief priests and the leading men of the Jews brought charges against Paul. I mean, let me pause. The Jews waste no time. Here is Festus, right, down in Jerusalem. It's been 2 years since this whole thing began. Festus shows up and says, okay, here I am, let's talk. And the first thing the Jews want to talk about is Paul. Notice verse 2. And they were urging him, verse 3, requesting a concession against Paul that he might have him brought to Jerusalem. In my Bible, quotes, at the same time setting an ambush to kill him on the way. So here's the Apostle Paul facing once again persecution, which is an incredible trial. And you say, then how does it go? Look at verse 4. Festus then answered that Paul was being kept in custody at Caesarea and that he himself was about to leave shortly. Therefore, the words of Festus, verse 5, let the influential men among you go there with me, that is up to Caesarea, and if there's anything wrong about the man, let them prosecute him. So here's the Apostle Paul. Here's Festus. Felix is gone. Here are the Jews. And here's my point. Nothing's changed. You say, the governor's changed. Well, the governor's changed, but that's the only thing that's changed. Nothing has changed. I mean, if I'm Paul, I'm thinking, Lord, I've been trying to have a good testimony. I've been doing my best to be a witness. I mean, don't these Jews ever get tired of trying to kill me? You would think that they would hate somebody more than me. But the persecution goes on and on and on, which is our first point. Expect continued persecution. Satan doesn't quit. It should not surprise us in the least that those who are not followers of Jesus Christ will oppose the gospel. It's not random. It's not chance. It is ultimately the work of Satan. Do you remember what Jesus said way back? I have it on the screen, recorded in John 15, verses 18 and 19. If the world hates you, he's talking obviously to his followers, you know that it's hated me before it hated you. If you are of the world would love its own, but because you are not of the world, why? I chose you out of the world. Because of this, the world hates you. What does it mean to be a Christian? It means that the Lord Jesus Christ chooses a group of people to come out of the world, and the world hates them. That's what Christ is saying. Continued in John 15, verse 20, remember the word that I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. We should expect continued persecution. You say, who from? Well, certainly from the world. And I want to be cautious there. That doesn't mean that every single person in the world is going to hate us, right? My guess is you have some unsafe friends, neighbors, relatives, who might even like you, and you're trying to use that for the good of the gospel, and well, you should. But it's that there is a world system in place, and the person behind the world system is Satan. And so as long as Satan is alive and well, and not at the bottom of a great abyss, then we would expect there to be continual persecution against Christians. Now, I'm focused here on the world. We often say that we really have, what, three enemies, the world, the flesh, and the devil. Just a quick review. Why do we say the world, the flesh, and the devil? Let's cover the flesh real quick. Galatians 5, 16, and 17. Paul writes, walk by the Spirit, you'll not carry out the desire of the flesh. Talking to Christians, all Christians have a flesh. That's not talking about your physical body. That is a part of me that is opposed to the Holy Spirit, right? I'll continue to read. For the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. For these are in opposition to one another. In every Christian, there is a battle. You say the battle is between my spirit and the flesh. No, the battle is between the Holy Spirit and your flesh. That's what Paul makes very clear here in Galatians 5. So we know that we struggle against the world, we struggle against the flesh, and you're familiar, I trust, with 1 Peter 5, 8, and 9, talking about Satan. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour, but resist him firm in your faith. We should never be surprised, here's the point, that the persecution continues because Satan doesn't quit. And that should not amaze us in the least. I've had a few people talk to me. I'm guessing you've maybe had some political conversations, right? What took place recently in our presidential realm was something that many people found quite surprising. And we had two candidates, and I want to be careful. I'm still not going to make political statements. It's an illustration. One representing the Republican Party, one representing the Democratic Party. And since then, there's been many people that have come out, including our president-elect, to say it is very clear that our media was definitely for the candidate who represented the more liberal party. Caution, I am not saying that either candidate was more a follower of Christ than the other. My prayer would be both of them would come to embrace the true gospel and know Jesus Christ. But it's interesting that some people actually act amazed. Wow, the media seems to be for the more liberal candidate. The media seems to be incredibly biased. And I think to myself, why would that surprise you? Why would that surprise you in the least? That Christians sometimes don't get jobs because they're Christians, or maybe they don't get promoted because they're Christians, or maybe they're looked down upon, even in the neighborhood, or made fun of because they're Christians. And that shouldn't surprise any of us. Jesus said, I've chose you out of the world, and you should expect that the world would hate you. The world put Christ on a cross for followers of Jesus. We recognize the world's not our friend, and thus we should expect continued persecution. Satan does not quit. Well, here's the Apostle Paul, and he's being interrogated by Festus. Remember, they're up in Caesarea now, and the Jews have come from Jerusalem up to Caesarea. They still want to do their best to kill the Apostle Paul, which will take us to our second point. Number one, expect continued persecution. Satan does not quit. Number two, patiently trust the Lord. Don't give up hope. Now again, the Apostle Paul has been here in Caesarea for 2 years. For two very long years. He's had a promise, let's review, right? The Lord said to Paul, recorded in Acts 23:11, but on the night immediately following, the Lord stood at his side and said, take courage, for as you've solemnly witnessed to my cause at Jerusalem, so you must witness at Rome also. That promise was given back in Jerusalem. That promise was given when Paul was in the Roman barracks. If I heard a promise like this, I'm thinking, great, praise the Lord, right? Maybe tomorrow the Lord's going to get me out of here and get me to Rome. Or the next day. Or certainly by the end of the week. But that doesn't take place. But Felix is now removed from the scene. And here's Festus. And it happens yet again. Notice verse 6, please. After he had spent not more than 8 or 10 days among them, he went down to Caesarea. And on the next day, he took a seat on the tribunal and ordered Paul to be brought. And Paul arrived, after Paul arrived, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood around him, bringing many and serious charges against him. Notice the end of verse 7, which they could not prove. Right? New governor, same story, it all happens again. And what does Paul do? Verse 8. He simply once again repeats what is true. While Paul said in his own defense, verse 8, I have committed no offense, either against the law of the Jews or against the temple or against Caesar. You say, so what do we see, Greg? We see a Paul who continues to trust the Lord and continues. I think I might need a little bit of help advancing the slide if you guys in the back could advance for me. Okay? The Apostle Paul being confident of the fact that he can trust the Lord and he doesn't give up hope. Whether it's Felix or whether it's Festus, Paul knew that he could trust God because God had made him a promise that he would make it to Rome. And so he simply repeats the facts once again, trusting the Lord. And so the story continues. And notice, please, verse 9. But Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, okay? So let's pause. Festus is the new governor. The Jews are a perpetual thorn in the governor's side. And so Festus has the bright idea, maybe the Jews would like this, and they would very much. So he says to Paul, verse 9, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and stand trial before me on these charges? Now again, it's confusing to me sometimes, but Caesarea is up north, Jerusalem's in the south, but it's always up to Jerusalem because Jerusalem's the high spot. Paul, are you willing? But Paul hasn't done anything wrong. And Paul knows what's true. Paul knows to go to Jerusalem is his death sentence. And he knows that. Paul knows that if I agree to go down and be tried, apart from a miracle of Christ, I'm gone. I'll be assassinated. Paul knows that. Anybody who thinks would know that. So what does the Apostle Paul say? Paul said, verse 10, I'm standing before Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. I have done no wrong to the Jews, as you also very well know. If then I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything worthy of death, I do not refuse to die. But if none of those things is true, of which these men accuse me, no one can hand me over to them. What is Paul doing here? Paul is absolutely confident that God is at work, that God will accomplish his will. That's our third point, our final point this evening. Remember that God is at work. He will accomplish his will. Paul doesn't know how. They're threatening Paul with going down / up to Jerusalem. That's a death sentence guaranteed. So the Apostle Paul does what he has the legal right to do. And people might disagree on this, but it makes perfectly good sense to me. Verse 11, in our English, four words, I appeal to Caesar. Every Roman has that right in this situation. They're not allowed to take a Roman and force him to go in front of a Jewish court like this. Paul has the right to appeal to Caesar. You say, why would you appeal to the Romans? The Romans have not been bad to Paul. Why did the Romans in the first place take Paul captive? It was for his own safety. It's not the Romans who hate Paul. It's not the Romans really, at least at this point in time, they will. But they really don't hate the gospel. It's the Jews that want to kill Paul. Can I remind us all? It's the Jews that wanted Christ on the cross. Now, they pressured the Romans to go along with it, and unfortunately that took place. But here's the Apostle Paul who makes the great appeal, verse 11, I appeal to Caesar, verse 12. Then when Festus had conferred with this council, he answered, you have appealed to Caesar? To Caesar you shall go. And so what takes place? Festus knows Paul's a Roman citizen. Festus knows Paul has the right. And God is accomplishing his will in ways that if you were right then, I'm sure none of us would have understood. But see, now we have the whole story. And we look back and we see God's fingerprints everywhere, all over these events. You say, Greg, how? Well, remember, It was Paul's desire to minister in Rome. That's what he wanted to do this whole time. And the Lord, in the vision that we've already looked at, assured Paul that he would minister in Rome. You say, yeah, but the Jews are still trying to kill him, and the Romans still are holding him. How's it going to work? Festus. Festus, basically what? He makes a ploy to keep the Jews happy. And he threatens Paul with going to Jerusalem. Paul has no time for that. And so he appeals to Caesar. And it's through that act, in ways I'm sure Paul didn't understand, that the Lord will arrange for Paul to do what he's wanted to do the whole time, which is to share the gospel in Rome. And that shouldn't surprise any of us. Can I remind us of what Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 11 says? Having been predestined according to his purpose, who works all things after the counsel of his will. I'd like to draw your attention to the second part of that verse, Ephesians 1:11. Who works all things after the counsel of his will. You say, Greg, I don't understand why I'm facing all these trials in my life. And I frequently have to say, I don't understand either. But we serve a God who works all things after the counsel of his will. And no matter what happens in your life or my life that neither one of us would like, we can be confident that God's working out his plan. And God is able to do what he plans to do. Okay? So what have we seen in this very simple message tonight? Number one, expect continued persecution. Satan does not quit. Number two, patiently trust the Lord. Don't give up hope. And number three, remember that God is at work and he will accomplish his will. I'd like to close with a story. It's a story I believe I've referred to that took place in my life. It's been over 20 years, or right about 20 years now. But it has to do with the contractor, and I won't be overly specific. About 20 years ago, I hired a contractor to do some work on the house. And his price was lower than others. He seemed to know very well what he was talking about. He performed the work that I hired him to do. And maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe 80% of the work somewhere in there, 90% of the work. He finished most of the job. And he said to me, Greg, I know that the agreement is I wouldn't get full payment until I finished, but I've encountered a rough situation. It would really help me out a lot if you'd be willing to pay me, and I'll come back and finish the job. I promise. And I agreed, and later regretted that decision because I never heard from him, never saw him. I gave him the full payment, and that was it. He was gone. And I started to call, and he never answered. So I started leaving messages on his voicemail. And he would return none of them. And I'm thinking, what do I do now? Well, I have his name, so I do some searching on the internet. And I don't even remember how. But somehow, I found out where he lived. And so one day, I made a surprise visit. And I knocked on his front door. I wasn't unkind. I said, hello, you may have forgot who I am. My name's Greg. And we had an agreement. And I gave you full payment. And he went into the world's longest story about why he meant to get back with me and failed. And what I just said in 10 seconds, he took about 5 minutes. And the longer it went, the more unbelievable it became, I assure you. But I'll let him finish. And I said, you know, I would greatly appreciate it if you would finish the job and do what you said you would do. He did come back, and he finished, I'll say, 95% of the job. And then told me he had to rush off. But he promised me he'd be back for that last 5%. And I decided it was way too much of a hassle to get him to go back. I'll finish it myself. And I did. Now, here's my point. Is that how you think of God? that God is someone who gives you His word. He promises to help you. He promises to bless you. And you have to like ask and ask and pray and pray. I'm not against prayer. And over again. God, did you forget me? What about me, God? What about me? Can I remind all of us that that's not Paul's view of God? That Paul continued to be persecuted, but he expected it. Satan never quits. So Paul, instead of doubting the Lord, patiently trusts the Lord. He doesn't give up hope because Paul remembers that God is at work and the Lord will accomplish His will. You say, Greg, I don't want to end thinking about that bad contractor. Give me something positive to just kind of anchor my thoughts. We've looked at this text many times because it's such a blessing to me personally, but I close with it tonight. I read from Matthew chapter 7, verses 9 and 10. What man is there among you who, when his son asks for a loaf, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, he will not give him a snake, will he? And the answer is no. Right? If my child, and as I'm older now, if my grandchild were to ask me for something good, right? A loaf or a fish, just to be funny, would I give him something bad, a stone or a snake? Never! And you know what's coming next, I believe, in the following verse. Jesus continues, if you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, and wicked people like us know that, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give what is good to those who ask Him? We come to the Father and we ask for good things, and He promises us that He will give us what is good. And we can be confident of that. It may not be today. It may not be tomorrow. It may be that we have to wait till a Felix passes from the scene. And then Festus comes and we think, now it's going to be different, and it's not. But we can be confident that we serve a God who works all things after the counsel of His will. Whatever challenge, trial that you're facing, perhaps even persecution like the Apostle Paul, you can be confident that the Lord will work all things according to the counsel of His will. You may be experiencing pain, but that does not mean that anything is wrong. The Lord is in control, and by His grace, may we continue to persevere and to trust Him.